and welcome to Rewatchable, episode number 313. Today we're discussing Agent Carter, season 2, episode 7, Monsters. My name is Danielle, and I'm going to be your host for today. And I'm also joined by three other lovely ladies. I have superfan Karen and newbies Brittany and Kendra. Good morning.
Morning.
Hello.
If you'd like to get in contact with us, which we really hope that you do, you can do so in multiple ways. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. You can come tumble us, as Natalie would say, at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can come join our Facebook group. We're called Rewatchables Rewinders. If you just search that in Facebook, you should be able to find us right away. The photo is currently of Agent Carter, because of course, and you can come join in on our lovely discussions that we're having over there and meme sharing and all that good stuff. So this week and every week, we'd like to start our show with some fun facts so that everyone can get used to our voices and kind of get to know more about us, I guess. So this week, Karen, would you like to kick us off with your fun fact?
Sure. So sometime this weekend, Kristen and I and some of her coworkers are supposed to be going to a geekeasy, which, if you guys don't know what it is, pretty obvious, speakeasy for nerds. And I don't really know what it entails. It's kind of new here around town, but I'm really excited. That's it. That's the whole story.
Are you dressing up? Is this like a 1920s you wear?
I don't know if I don't think it's necessarily like that. I think that mostly it's just supposed to be like a secret entrance kind of thing, or like it's a little more hidden. Like it's supposed to be in the basement of another bar, I think.
Gotcha.
And I think it's just like nerd themed, and you might be able to play games. Honestly, I haven't really looked into it.
Then you'll be even more surprised.
Yeah. And I never go out with people except when I go visit
full
you.
Stop.
Or the girls around here. We don't do it that often. So I'm like super excited.
That sounds awesome. Please take photos and report back.
Yeah.
Brittany, what is your fun fact for the week?
My fun fact is that I rewatched seasons 1 through 3 of Schitt's Creek and then watched seasons 4 and 5. And then last night watched Fleabag season 2. And I'm just, you know, I'm honestly convinced that no other TV ever needs to be made again, because it was perfect. And we don't need any more TV. It's all done. Everything that can be done and be wonderful about TV without crashing and burning has been made.
So just shut it down.
Just shut it down. It's time. We've peaked as an entertainment industry.
Wow. Okay. I'm just going to go delete my article about how Agent Carter season 3 needs to happen now.
No. It was just, I don't know. They were just two very perfect and fulfilling shows, which I think I needed. It was just uncomplicated television. Complicated, but like in one case, everything resolved nicely and explored fully. And in another case, so complicated and unresolved that you feel satisfied because it's so complicated and unresolved. I don't know. It was a very rewarding TV week, and I'm scared to watch anything else ever again.
I've heard such good things about Fleabag. Like, everybody is like, this is the best thing you'll ever watch.
So Fleabag, the first season came out a few years ago, and it's unbelievable. Like, Phoebe Waller-Bridge just became my favorite human and creator, and I, like, went crazy. Like, the only thing I haven't done is I have not watched Killing Eve, which she also does, but that I feel like has like such pressure on it right now that I'm like, I can't. Yeah, it's like one of the, it's like the same reason I did not watch Game of Thrones for 8 years, which I'm really glad I didn't, because I'm really angry.
Same.
But it's like, it's one of those things that's just so, there's so much attention on it that I'm like, you know what, I'm good. And but her Fleabag was so good, and then the second season better than the first, and it's like maybe a 3-hour watch, not even. They're like 6 episodes and they're only 25 minutes long.
Oh wow.
Where is this?
It's on Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime, okay.
And she has another series that I think is still on US Netflix. I don't know.
Yes.
It's called Crashing.
I did watch that one.
Oh my God. I've rewatched Crashing so many times.
Really?
Oh, I love it. And I don't know what it is about it, but it's just, I absolutely love Crashing. Not the HBO series, because every time a headline comes out that's like Crashing renewed, I'm like, yes! But it's never, never about the Crashing that I want it to be about.
So the headline should be Crashing, not that one, is renewed. Yeah.
But actually the headlines are reversed for everyone else in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I highly recommend both of those shows, especially Schitt's Creek. It has one more season coming out next year. And it's so good. It's just very, if you want something that's just happy and, you know, good, then watch that. And also watch Fleabag, because it's fantastic.
Well, now I'm motivated to do so. Because basically you just yelled at me to do it. And now yeah. I'm like, yes. Yeah.
That's how I get my point across. I just yell. It sounds like I'm excited and promoting something, but really I'm just yelling orders.
I mean, I love it. And I want more of it. Kendra, what is your fun fact for the week?
Well, kind of contrary to Brittany's point about shutting the entire TV industry down, I have spent some time this week watching two new-ish shows, also in the vein of Agent Carter, starring women, Dead to Me on Netflix. So good.
That was going to be my fun fact after Brittany's rant. But
okay, you can talk about that one, and I'll talk about Shrill by... starring A.D. Bryant on HBO. All just have such amazing, relatable starring characters, and I just got through so much of all of them. And again, like, same as Brittany was saying, so short. Like, they're half an hour episodes, so you get through them so quickly, and then you get to the end of it, and you're like, what have I done with my life for the past 4 hours? And then you don't feel as bad.
Yeah, that's not bad at all. I've been wanting to watch Shrill.
Yeah, I love it.
But it looks great. So yeah, then I guess my fun fact of the week is I relate more to Judy from Dead to Me than I ever thought I would. Like, she is me, maybe aside from the murdering.
The murder.
Yeah. What? I mean, spoiler alert, but murder. I don't think that's me, but who knows?
Didn't think it was her either.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. She didn't think it was her. Every time, I guess another fun fact is, like, every time I get in my car and I drive, I like, and I feel a bump in the road. I'm like, oh my God, did I hit someone? Every single time. So it could be me. She could be me. But also, Bang's representation is something that I've been really wanting from television and movies, and Dead to Me gives it to me.
It's here.
So yeah, fun facts all around. All right. But well, I guess TV is canceled, so we might as well look backwards. Might as well look backwards at Agent Carter. And this week we are talking about season 2, episode 7, Monsters. We don't have an official recap for this week. So off the top of my head, here are some of the things that happen. Wilkes has a chamber now, and it's kind of cool, I guess. But also he's stuck in there all the time, which I guess isn't as cool. We find out that Dottie is very much frightened of Whitney Frost to the point where she gives up secrets. And so Peggy and Jarvis walk into a trap that they know is a trap, but they don't know that the trap is not for them because that's kind of self-centered. And Anna Jarvis ends up getting shot, and we don't know what happens to her. That is not a sassy summary. Ariana could have done better. I might have done better if I was actually writing it. And I wasn't going to sing again this week, so that wasn't happening, but I tried my best, and hopefully that gives a good idea of what happened. Oh, and also, Jack Thompson is not in this episode. I feel like that's the other important thing that everyone needs to know.
I thought your recap was lovely.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate it. Oh, gosh. All right. So let's start with Dottie and Whitney Frost, because I feel like that is one of the most interesting dynamics that the show has offered. And I don't think it's necessarily one that we saw coming from the very beginning of the season, especially with Dottie kind of like flitting in and out, and for a lot of it on the other coast. So Dottie is interrogated by Vernon Masters, Red Foreman, as we like to call him on this podcast. And he's not intimidating at all. He it's really funny to me, and I don't know if anyone else kind of picks up on this, but like when he's talking to other male characters, such as Jack or even Sousa in this episode, I see his intimidation there, but I don't feel it at all when he talks to Dottie and Peggy. Does anyone else, like just thinking about this right now, I've kind of noticed it. Does anyone else kind of see that, those interactions, or like get that dynamic?
Yes, absolutely. And I think part of it is the intimidation he has with the male characters is almost like a political one. Like he threatens their jobs and their political motivations. Whereas with Dottie specifically, like he threatens her physically, which is not anything that she's afraid of.
Cause she's pulled on her own teeth.
Yeah, exactly. She's crazy. But I think they did such a great job with making the women so strong in the show that next to, like, also he's kind of a short old bald dude. Like he's not that scary physically. You know what I mean? And a lot of the women are already kind of not in obvious positions of power. So he can't necessarily take that away from them. Even with Peggy, she's had to fight so hard just to get to where she is now. And it's always tenuous, her staying there, especially with the way that Jack like can't make up his mind sometimes. So I feel like anything that he tries to do to them, they're just like, you're nothing special.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think that like they, because he's very much like threatening on a political level, and men sometimes, some men can be fragile when it comes to their reputations, and that is what it seems like Vernon Masters is threatening most. And Peggy and Dottie like don't care about that at all. So I find it interesting. So yeah, as we mentioned, like he threatens to physically harm Dottie, but she's just like, I've done worse to myself than you can ever do to me, which again shows how crazy, I guess, her training was and just everything in her life has been. But everything changes the moment Whitney Frost walks down there to interrogate Dottie. At first, you can see that Dottie's trying to keep up a fearless front, but it's so much different than any other face she uses with anyone else, even with Peggy. How did their interactions play for you? Was it something that you weren't expecting and really enjoyed, or was it something that was just kind of another, like not notable, I guess?
Well, this is my favorite scene.
I didn't know that. Sorry.
I will say, for all the listeners out there, you can tell that Danielle was not on the Avatar podcast.
Yep, because
she just casually said, and everything changed without being crazy. So it's fine.
I don't understand that.
I was about to interrupt and be like, Brittany.
Yeah, I was like, how did she just say that so straight? Like,
it felt so wrong.
The phrase, and everything changed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
anyway.
All right. Well, I guess half rewatchable listeners were going to be yelling at me with you guys, and the other half is like me and doesn't know what's going on.
So. But anyway, in regards to Dottie and Whitney. So I really liked this scene mainly because of their dynamic and putting these two like we've seen Peggy versus both of them. We've seen men versus both of them, but we've never seen like these just two strong forces together in a room. And I think what was the most interesting bit here was that I didn't know who was going to win.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just like, it was, the tension in this scene was just so good because I was guessing the whole time. I was like, well, what is Dottie going to do to undermine that? And what is Whitney going to do to undermine that? And what is, like, it was just very cool to see them talk and, you know, try to use whatever they've been using against everybody else in their lives here. And it was, I just really liked putting them two together, and I would have never thought to put these two together. Like, I didn't think it was ever going to happen. Cause like you said, one was on one coast, one, you know, it was very, very interesting. And I liked it until like the whole, like, you know, I'm going to torture you part, but whatever. I feel like we have a lot of that in this show. It's like, I loved everything up until the actual torture.
I mean, let's talk about that actual torture. Like, Dottie is very much afraid. She saw what happened to all of the people that Whitney took down in that boardroom. And the moment she starts screaming, I think the camera even cuts away from her. And so all we hear is her screaming when dark matter is hitting her or something like that. That is terrifying.
Yeah. I think it also goes to commercial, which don't know what, is she fully killing her or whatever? So yeah, it was a lot. And she's turning black and
Yeah, it does a lot for both of their characters. I think one of the issues that we've had up until maybe the last episode was understanding fully the danger of Whitney Frost, because before she was just kind of swallowing rats and her face was cracking and, she accidentally I guess liquefied a guy. I don't know what we want to call it, but it was never in scenes where we felt any stakes or that we felt the true ferocity of what was going on. And I feel like we get that with the last episode. And then here, the fact that the dark matter can reduce someone like Dottie to screaming and even to giving up secrets, which I also want to talk about. I think that adds a lot to Whitney's character and kind of gives us a better understanding of why we should be afraid of her.
And I think part of it is she has so much more control now. She's not afraid of it. She's embracing it. She enjoys the power that it gives her. And where she went from completely accidentally absorbing that one guy to trying to test it out. And even in the room with all of the guys, she was afraid and she didn't know what she was doing. And this is when she realized she doesn't have to touch somebody in order to absorb them. Her power kind of expands. Here, she has such finite control over it that she can almost kill Dottie and then bring it back. And that's what's terrifying to me, because she's not just, a ticking time bomb anymore. She has control over this and she can use it like a surgeon.
It's also interesting to see that Dottie actually has fears, because up until now she's kind of either had the upper hand or just kind of been going along with what's happening to her, and we've kind of assumed that it's because she either doesn't really care what happens to her or she just knows what's going to happen to her, so doesn't care about the steps along the way. But you very clearly see here that she does fear pain and probably death as well as a result of that.
Yeah, she's more human, I guess, than we've seen her previously.
And I think it's super, super important that Dottie really only feels afraid around women. She is not afraid of men. She's not afraid of what they can do to her physically, emotionally, mentally, anything. And it's probably because she's so used to it. Mm-hmm. But women understand other women in such an intimate way and understand how they operate. And that's the thing that I also love this scene. It was so good in so many different ways. But when Whitney's like, you've done enough to Vernon Masters, and she's like, I'm going to talk to her, I was like, oh shit, here we go. Because she knows how to get through to Dottie, not even just with the pain, but just she knows how Dottie thinks and how she operates, much like Peggy does, because all three of them are used to kind of coming up from the bottom and having to hide their emotions and their feelings and the way that they have to pretend around men and all this other stuff. And it just goes to show you that, I don't know. I think both of these women are so interesting, and they're similar, but they're different enough that it doesn't feel like Whitney is a repeat of Dottie. And I think that's really important.
Definitely. For how few, I guess, female villains or fierce female villains that we actually get in stuff like this, I definitely think that's very important, that they don't feel like copies of each other. And it's also, I mean, slight tangent, but it's also kind of surprising that we don't get more female villains, because they intimidate everyone and sometimes they're the best drawn ones. I mean, for example, we have these two, and then also who comes to mind immediately is Hela Thor's sister. Like, I think she was one of the better villains that's come out of the MCU. They all understand on a higher level, like, what is intimidating or what is scary. And it's very different from what male villains always want.
And they subvert your expectations a lot. I mean, Peggy, the show's talked about this before, like, women are overlooked mm-hmm. and they're underestimated. And I think as audience members, unfortunately, even women sometimes feel that way because we're not used to seeing that on screen. And all of a sudden they come swinging out of nowhere and you're like, oh, here we go. And it's really exciting because you don't really know what's going to happen. I feel like a lot of male villains, you tend to know like what their motivations are and what they're going to do and kind of where they come from. But when you get a really well-drawn female villain, you're like, I have no idea what's going to happen next because I've rarely seen this on television or in movies.
And also, like, female villains are usually coming from a place of like they have already had a lifetime of being up against men. Mm-hmm. Like, whether it's just walking out of the house in the morning, you know, so like it's constant combat, like, from a societal level in anything, genre or not. And so, you know, they're coming into this already, like, just completely void to, like, oh, what will these men think of me? Because they're just like, well, that's just another day in the life.
Right.
So, and I think we see that here, too, like, when we were talking about how watching Dottie against Red Foreman, or Masters, you know, it's like, we see... She's just like, you're not intimidating because I've been here. I've done that. I'm trained. And she was literally trained to combat that and like work her way in and know what's expected of her in her role as a female age, like, you know, super killer spy. So I think, and Peggy, the same thing. It's just like, yeah. Do you see the office I work in? Do you see the level of incompetence here? Like, men do not scare me. Which I really appreciate.
Well, like you said, Dottie was prepared. Like, she knew exactly the kind of interrogation techniques that men use. Like, she was ready for him to pull out her teeth. She's like, I've done it. When they basically tried to do the truth serum, she's like, yeah, what do you think I've been injecting myself with for years? Like, she knows. And because it's something that she's had to deal with or like knew about or always felt. In contrast to what comes to mind immediately when we were talking about how like this is like a lifetime full of these sort of interactions, it's that versus, I guess, the idea of the one bad day that made the Joker who he was. It was one bad day, or for Batman to turn. The Joker was basically like, you know, it could just take one bad day and you could become a villain. Whereas with women, it's not that, because every day can be a bad day. But I also want to talk really quickly about the fact that Dottie, I don't want to say she gave up the secrets or gave up the information so easily, but I was surprised, and I had forgotten about this, I was surprised at how quickly Dottie divulged the information. While she and Peggy aren't friends per se, or they're not necessarily on the same side, she has a lot of respect for Peggy, but she gave up that information, at least seemingly with how the episode was flowing and with time-wise, she gave it up pretty quickly. Was anyone else surprised about that?
A little bit, because you're right. I think there's actually like a fair bit of loyalty, kind of even between the two of them. I was going to say specifically Dottie to Peggy, but I think Peggy... Mm-hmm. Again, she goes to try to rescue her. She knows that, like, she doesn't want her death or, like, her torture to be on her conscience. But I think that as much as she despises Dottie, you know, she still sees her as another human being. And she wants the law to take care of Dottie. She doesn't want anything else to happen to her, which is totally fair. But I think that just goes to show you how painful and terrifying dark matter is and how she recognizes the power that Whitney has, not only with the dark matter, but also just as a extremely intelligent person who is capable of figuring out how to get exactly what she wants. And I don't think Dottie really wanted to give up that information, to be honest. But
oh, no.
She is a survivor, and this was her survival instinct. So I kind of don't blame her either.
And I think a lot of what she respects in Peggy is her strength and her capability. And now she's seeing that in someone else, and she's experienced the power of the Zero Matter, and maybe now thinks that Winnie's going to be the winner in all of this, and her loyalty is switching because, like Karen says, she's a survivor and is looking out for herself.
Can you imagine if Dottie met Whitney before she met Peggy, and the duo that those two would be?
I would watch that.
Yeah.
That TV show wouldn't have to be canceled. Moving Aww. Forward. All right. I want to back up to the beginning of the episode now. We'll get back to Whitney and Dottie. But I want to back up to the beginning where Anna helps Wilkes build his chamber, and it works. He becomes corporeal, which I guess is exciting. As I mentioned, I think a few episodes ago, I'm starting to remember why I'm not a huge fan of Wilkes. And so I apologize if I sound a little less than enthused, but I don't really care. But his chamber works. And the first thing he does is grabs Peg and kisses her in front of everyone. Thoughts on that? Did it feel weird? Was it exciting? Did it play weird because it was just like, I have a body kiss?
It was surprising, but also I think that's been a long time coming. Sure. And obviously he was pretty pumped that he had a body again, so I can see him being like swept up in that moment and being like, yeah, lips. But
that's what I often have.
I thought it made sense. I didn't really feel anything about it, though.
I was surprised I also didn't really feel anything, because I've talked before a few episodes ago that I really liked Wilkes. And even this time around, like, I see a little bit more of the issues that people have with his character, which are like 100% valid, but I still have hope that he will be the character I know he can be. And in this moment, it was sort of like, I think it would have played really, really differently if it wasn't so obvious how jealous he was of the chemistry between Peggy and Sousa. Like, if that didn't exist, I would have been 100% on board with this, especially because Peggy liked it. Like, she blushed. Like, I think she does have feelings for him. And if he did get swept up in the moment, it would have felt nice. But it felt like a reaction to what's going on between Peggy and Sousa, and that felt a little creepy and territorial, and it didn't really come off the way that I think it was meant to.
Yeah, he's been very... I really liked him in the beginning of the season, but I feel like a lot of his actions and motivations, especially right here, like you said, Karen, is more reactory than like... Like, yes, I can... completely agree. He's wanted to do that for a very long time, and then unfortunately turned into like a ghost, as Dottie calls him. But yeah, I feel like he's so like, I never know what position he's going to take from one scene to the next. And so I'm just sort of like, okay, yes. Like, I kind of felt that this was going to happen. But also it's just, you know, we've seen Peggy and Sousa outside of Wilkes's range as well. So there's like a lot more layered on that relationship at the moment to then have this just be like a, oh, right, you also like Peggy and now you can kiss her. I didn't really feel anything for him. It was just sort of like a, okay, I'm glad that's over with moment.
Mm-hmm. Like, we check that box.
Yeah, exactly. We check that box. And also, I will say, his chamber just reminded me of like some sort of very bad Chuck E. Cheese style arcade game, like with the lighting and, the like tubey looking things. Especially when he was eating with Anna later, I was just like, oh my gosh, this thing looks so cheesy.
But, yeah, they didn't spend the budget on it.
They're like, what do we have lying around here?
Let's just slap something together. One of the things that we had discussed a little bit last week, and then I think I kind of want to get your guys' thoughts on too, is the idea that is the way Wilkes is behaving. Karen, you mentioned how he seems kind of like uneven from one scene to the next, or he seems very reactionary, and sometimes really dialed up. Do we think that's him as a result of him losing his body? Do we think it's him, maybe not baseline, but kind of how, like something he hides in him? Or do we think it's a result of the dark matter affecting him? Like we see the dark matter sort of affecting Whitney in that she gets a little bit more vicious, or we can kind of relate the two. Do we think the dark matter is affecting his character and making him more rash, more jealous, more self-centered?
To be fair, sure. He's going through a lot right now.
And that, yes, we definitely brought up that point last week, and I agree with that for sure.
I don't know. I feel like with Whitney, this has all been inside her all along, and now she has the power to act on it, and so she is. With Wilkes, I feel like it's a little less like that. I think that the fact that he isn't corporeal for most of this is definitely messing with his mind. He says that he can feel something dark kind of calling to him, and he's probably terrified. And I do think that it's amping up his anger a lot. I think we saw that especially in the last episode. I watched like 5 in a row, so I'm kind of, you know, mushing them all together. But I don't think that all of this is inherent inside of him, because when we first meet him, like, he was super chill, and I liked that he was more excited about his science, and, you know, he was trying to impress Peggy with his wine, and it didn't feel like he was a very territorial person. Felt like he maybe didn't have a lot of confidence and stuff like that, whereas now it does feel a little bit more like posturing. Whereas when we first meet Whitney, you can see that there's something underneath the surface where she's acting like calm and collected and like nothing bothers her, but she's really sick and tired of people like taking advantage of her, using her, feeling like she's not in a position where she should be. So I think part of it, long story short, part of it is the dark matter exasperating things and the fact that he's kind of slowly disappearing and he's afraid. But part of it just kind of feels like uneven characterization.
I think it's tough to say because we didn't know him that well before he got affected by the zero matter. But you can kind of see later in the episode when he has the altercation with Whitney and he's kind of harnessing the power in a way, that there's like a little bit of darkness creeping up there, it seems, from that.
But we have seen him, like, the confrontation with the donut guy, like, he was super calm. Peggy was the one who was ready to punch his lights out. I feel like a lot of his anger is fueled by the dark matter versus, like, it actually being inherent. Although, then again, it could just be inside of him and he knows that he can't actually release it because he's going to be the one who ends up in the most trouble.
Right.
But yeah, like you said, we don't see enough of him in the beginning to really know for sure, which I think is a fault of the show. They should have given us a couple more clues into that if they wanted to set this up as like an actual question for us to be asking.
Or even like to make us care about him a little more before like all the stakes were on him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also even what we did get before all of this happened was, you know, can we trust this guy who's like sneaking around in the offices? And we didn't really like, even from that moment when we're watching this, we don't know whose side anyone's on as a viewer. So our first glimpse of him is automatically coming from a place of we can't trust anyone. So like we're judging and judging, and then all of a sudden the black matter stuff happens and like dark matter and like we're zero matter. What is it? Dark zero. I have no idea.
I think it's zero.
Zero. Okay.
I was calling it.
I keep saying dark matter and I keep thinking of the sci-fi show, but I think it's zero matter.
Okay.
Sorry, like, guys.
As I'm saying it, I'm like, I don't think any of these are correct. So even like once we get him in that position where he is like fully in the mission and ready to steal the zero matter, you know, we are just starting to trust him. And then now we have this other complicated layer on top of him. So I think we needed probably one more episode where he's in a majority of the scenes in between that to get a little bit more. But like Karen said, like right now it's hard to separate out the difference between, is he being affected by the zero matter, which I think he is, versus like, is this kind of just sloppy character plotting, which I think is a little bit, because there's so much else going on that it's like, oh, and then Wilkes. So.
But hey, at least he's corporeal now, which
yes,
I guess is always a good thing.
$400 bottles of wine.
$400 bottles of wine. Ariana put a note in here that actually was my thought process this time around, and I never thought about it the first time. But like, he wants to eat now, and that's great. He hasn't eaten in a few days. But like, if he's eating and drinking, but also only confined to the chamber, how does he go to the bathroom?
This is 100% a Mitch question.
Yeah, well, yes. Ariana definitely verbalized what Mitch would ask, but I had the same question too. Like, she asked, does Anna bring him a jar to pee in his little chamber that she has to carry out? Like, how does this work?
Maybe he just steps out of the chamber and then like everything kind of disappears. And back in. That would be so convenient, you guys.
Oh my God. That's gross. All right. Just curious. So we'll get back to books in a second. Because obviously, like, everybody wants him at the end. I don't know. But I want to talk about Sousa. And his role in this episode is really interesting. He's very much separated from the rest of the group for the majority of the episode, if not all of it. He's kind of dealing with the SSR end of things. He's dealing with Vernon Masters, who pays him a visit. While he's on the phone with Peg, which I enjoyed that phone conversation very much.
That was great.
I love that they have that sort of language, or they can pick up on it. I think Peggy was a little slow on picking up on it, but I enjoy that kind of stuff. But Vernon Masters basically is like, hey, I need you to do this. And Sousa doesn't budge. Sousa is not intimidated by him at all. And I thought that was kind of ballsy of Masters to throw his weight around that much with someone he's never really talked to before. It felt a little off to me. I don't know if anyone else had feelings about that.
I think he's getting a little desperate now that Whitney's mm-hmm. in charge and that he's seen what she's capable of doing. He's That's not just for point. Himself anymore. It's like to save his life, pretty much.
I think that's a great point. Sorry, go ahead.
And I think he's used to dealing with Jack, who's kind of a pushover most of the time. And he's used to people just doing what he says. And Sousa is like Peggy. He's, you know, righteous, and he knows what's good and bad, and he's not afraid to stick out his neck for what he thinks is right. And I do think it was kind of dumb on Vernon Masters' part not to realize that about Sousa from the beginning, because I think it's pretty obvious. But yeah, desperation probably plays a huge role there.
But I mean, I guess his run-in with Vernon Masters, this is terrible to say, but if Sousa was looking bad and also attractive in the last episode, he looks like he got run over by quite a few trains in this episode, and so totally into it. For those of you who didn't listen last week, the consensus was that we like our men when they look like they've been run over by trains, because they're just sexier that way. And I think Sousa kind of takes the cake in this episode with that, because he gets beat up pretty bad.
Not only that, a lot of people had a reaction to that line. So, I mean, just us saying that, like, yeah. on the Twitter.
On the Twitter.
They felt like we were coming for them with that description, so. Yeah,
did wrong. They?
Yeah, well, mainly Leo, but, you know. Yeah, it's, he got quite the beating, like, could barely walk up the stairs, and I just felt so bad for him.
Yeah.
And he's, like, trying to, like, you know, get through it and just keep moving on and
act normal.
Like, normal.
Oh. But then Masters takes over his job and just like, I'm from another, is he FBI? I don't remember.
War Council?
War Council.
Something like that.
Basically is inserting himself into the SSR and told Sousa to go home, which is not good. Not great. Not unexpected, but still a little concerning.
I just don't like how, I mean, I get how it works. You know, him just being able to come in and take over and Sousa really having no grounds to be like, no, that's not how this is going to work. But at the same time, it just feels like he could have put up a little bit more of a fight, but really, what is he going to do? It's like we were saying earlier, it's this men versus men. It's politics. It's this is the way it is. And there's no room for you to argue. Mm-hmm. And I really liked that this kind of like reminded me of their conversation where he's just like, I don't want to be a hero. Like he's like trying to like build up Sousa's story. And he's just like, that's not what I want.
I just want to do the best I can or something right. like that. I loved that moment. I thought that was really interesting. Slightly reminiscent of something we've heard Steve Rogers say previously. The line that's like, I don't want to kill anyone. I just don't like bullies. Like his motivation is not to be heralded for taking great action and being this great guy. He just like wants to do what needs to be done to the best of his ability. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully moving forward, because I guess he's no longer head of the SSR or he's on leave to take care of his wounds. We'll be seeing more of him outside of the office. Because like I said before, he was very much siloed in this episode. I actually thought at some point that they were going to make the love triangle explicit. When Wilkes kissed Peggy, I thought that he was going to walk in and I was really not going to be happy about it.
Yeah, I couldn't remember what happened. And I was like, please no, please no, please don't.
Yeah, please don't walk in. Please don't do this. But while Sousa is getting beat up, Jarvis and Peggy are trying to reactivate the locator / speaker or whatever it is that's in Dottie's necklace. And they figure out where she is because Whitney basically allows them to figure out where she is. And so they set off on another adventure. This one feels slightly different, I think, from the get-go, but we don't really know why. But so they set off on an adventure. Jarvis has another one of Howard's toys that he brings along. But before they get to Whitney's mansion or wherever it is that they go, Jarvis and Peggy have this really interesting conversation in the car that Jarvis brings up. And I don't think we get a lot of moments between Peggy and Jarvis that are like this. We get a lot of great banter. We get Peggy sometimes criticizing Jarvis, but the quiet moments we don't have a lot of. And I feel like this one very much harkens back to the one where in season one where he's comforting Peggy and cleaning up her wounds while she's sitting on his couch and basically saying, like, you don't have to do this alone. And I thought that this one was also very lovely, even though they were kind of talking about her relationship with men in a love triangle that I don't necessarily enjoy. Did this scene stick out to anyone? Do we like Jarvis and Peggy when they're not being sassy to each other?
Yes.
Absolutely. Oh my God, yes.
I mean, I kind of knew the answer to the question, but I also didn't know how else to pose it.
It's so interesting to me because both of them are, especially Peggy, doesn't really allow herself to get super emotional in front of people. And you can tell she's extremely uncomfortable talking about all of this with Jarvis. But at the same time, Jarvis is like super her best friend. And he knows that like they kind of do need to talk about it and that she's struggling and he's trying to help. And it doesn't feel invasive for some reason. I don't know if it's just because that's the kind of relationship they have or the fact that Jarvis just doesn't feel like that kind of person. Like he doesn't really push. And he doesn't judge. I mean, he's Howard Stark's butler. Like, he's not going to judge anything. And I think Peggy really doesn't know how to react, which is a very new feeling for her because she always knows what to do. And this moment just felt like two friends talking about something uncomfortable, but also 100% trusting in each other. And man, oh man, I just love their relationship so much. It's so healthy and solid and different from a lot of other male-female friendships in like anything. And I just want more of this, please.
Yeah, I think we've had enough time of watching their relationship in one other vein that like having a ton of these Jarvis and Peggy moments in this episode that are just softer and like, you know, all this is always there, but it just isn't explored because there's frankly no time. And just to have, you know, this side of their dynamic that I think has always been lurking and just their comfort with one another. It's just, I love these moments in any type of relationship on TV where it's just like combat, combat, combat. But then you know that like there actually are these other times in their lives where they can just be softer with one another. I also like when they're like mixed in, you know, like they're like going, if like a pairing is like going at each other and then they just like have like a moment and then they go back to it. Oh.
I like those moments as well. I also like that this interaction between the two of them shows how perceptive Jarvis is. I don't think we underestimate Jarvis by any means. Like we know he's intelligent. We know he's not just a butler, but he's also very perceptive as to not only what's going on with Peggy, the fact that she's in a love triangle, but also knowing how she feels about her situation or having a read on that. Like he knows that she's uncomfortable with it. And that's kind of how he approaches this talk with her. It's not just like, so you're in a love triangle now, eh? You know, he's just very perceptive. And I really enjoy these kinds of moments seeing that Jarvis. So they have this little chat, which is very nice. And then they go back into, like Brittany was saying, combat mode. But they don't combat mode real hard because they get captured pretty quickly. Jarvis doesn't put in the right code. He puts in, I can't remember the actress's names now. He puts in the wrong actress's measurements for the immediate blast and instead puts in another actress's measurements as the code, which is for a delayed blast because Howard Stark, everyone. But so they get captured with Dottie and so they're all kind of stuck in the basement. Jarvis is muttering to himself the different measurements, trying to figure out where he went wrong. And Peggy and Dottie are basically in a race to try to get out of their bindings, which I thought was kind of interesting. Not that we think that Dottie was going to do anything to Peggy and Jarvis, I don't think. But I also like, again, this goes back to their relationship that we were talking about. It's very much, they're not best friends, but they have this sort of competitive spirit rather than like, no, I'm really going to get you. It felt more playful than anything. At least to me, it did.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think Dottie would ever, well, ever, I guess. I don't think in this case she would actively hurt Peggy. Like, I think giving up the information was a different thing. I think she knows that Whitney, even though she is powerful and strong, is not going to offer her the same kind of, like, relative kindness that Peggy does. So I don't think she would ever take any serious action against her. So it was really fun just to see them compete, see who is more capable.
And it's also kind of funny that Jarvis is the one to be able to untie himself first. I very much enjoyed that because it just seemed like he was very distracted. And then the next thing you know, he's just freeing himself.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And also the fact that he would not put his socked foot on the floor made me so happy for some reason. Where he like takes off his shoe, gets his foot out and puts it immediately back in his shoe. I was like, oh, you would do that. Like you're being held hostage and you still will not let your foot touch the floor. It was just like a tiny, tiny, tiny little detail, but I just loved it so much.
That, yes, that was great. He always has to be proper. He always has to look good.
And also, and like, Peggy and Dottie, like, shooting daggers at each other as they're, like, strategizing and freeing themselves and, like, you know, when they both get their hands out at the same time and they're just like, oh, like.
It's a draw.
Yeah, it's very good.
So the delayed blast goes off and they kind of have an easy way out of the house. But in getting out of the house, they realize that, and Dottie kind of helps with this, a little late on that, Dottie, but basically that the trap that they knew where they were walking into wasn't a trap for them. And so they have to rush back to Howard's to basically make sure that Anna and Wilkes are okay. And I guess we didn't talk about them, their little fancy dinner that they had. They had that $400 bottle of wine that we mentioned, but there's a really nice moment that I do like between Anna and Wilkes. And that's when Anna moves to the side of the table to be closer to Wilkes. That seems like a more friendship thing when she's about to start talking to him about slightly deeper things and just like, how was your day? And I enjoyed their pairing and their scene together more than I've enjoyed his scenes with other people. I think it was a really nice palate cleanser from everything else that was happening in this episode.
Yeah, I think that really comes down to Anna, to be honest, because she's so lovely. And at this point, she's really the only real civilian character because Jarvis is in the thick of things constantly. And he, I mean, like Peggy said, like he's part of the team now and she's kind of our outside perspective. And she's worried about Peggy and she's worried about her husband and she kind of doesn't really know what's going on, but she's there helping because that's what she does. And, you know, her cooking Wilkes food and everything is almost feels like a coping mechanism. Like she wants to be helpful and she's doing the best she can letting Jarvis go, but also, you know, being very, very worried about his safety. And I just like that she confides in Wilkes, one, because he can't really go anywhere else, and he pretty much says that himself, but two, because, you know, he's in the middle of all of this, and he was just a scientist before Zero Matter got a hold of him, and it feels like, in a little way, they're kind of on the same page, because I'm sure he's worrying about Peggy as well, and especially everything they're doing for him. And yeah, it's just a really sweet moment. And I love Anna so, so much.
Yeah, I like the idea of it being kind of a coping mechanism for her to get through this. And also, like, it's a really small way that she can actually help is by, like, taking care of him, who's, like, in deep with the situation. I agree that the scene basically was just a reflection of her being awesome. I didn't really get much from Wilkes in the scene at all. It was just kind of a sounding board for her, it seemed.
And so then when Whitney comes to enact her plan, I'm assuming everyone feels much more for Anna's situation. Even before she gets shot, than the fact that Whitney is stealing Wilkes.
I was terrified for Anna even this time around. And I was like, well, Wilkes, whatever.
Yeah, he can go. Don't hurt Anna. So Whitney steals Wilkes. It seems like she's stealing him because she sees him as a potential ally, but also a slight lab rat. She's just interested with how the Zero Matter has affected him. And it kind of seems like one of those villain things where it's like, I know how you can have power, and I want to see you get this power. Let's like get you power, whatever. But like we said, I think the real threat here is the threat to Anna. Did Whitney's shooting Anna, especially after Whitney was like, I'm not going to shoot you, I'm not that type of person, did it come as a surprise to everyone? Or did it kind of feel like it was coming because she took out a gun?
I was surprised because I felt like when Whitney was talking to Wilkes, there was this like moment of just like pure curiosity in the science of it all. And that's when we had those flashbacks, you know, it really layered Whitney's character to be like, okay, she is interested in this. This is something that is special to her and something she wants to explore. And when she had that little spark of excitement back again about, like, you know, how are you doing this? How does this work? How does this blah, 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 blah. You know, I was like, okay, she is, her focus has shifted a little bit from I am powerful being to, oh, I'm reverting back to, like, I'm actually, like, this geeky scientist and I want to know what's going on. So I did not think that she would actually shoot anyone. I thought that they'd get away. And in fact, I actually had to rewind because I thought she got hit by, like, I must have looked up or something and missed that it was a shot. And I thought that she got hit by, like, a car or something like that. So, like, when I went back and, like, watched it, I was like, oh, I don't necessarily like that. I didn't think that they were going to have that happen, but it did set a different level of stakes in some regard. So, yeah, I was surprised.
And so I guess the question now is, what do you think will happen to Anna? Do you think it was a fatal shot? Do you think that she's going to die? Do you think she's going to live? What are the consequences here?
If Peggy can survive that fall, which I'm still not convinced she should have.
Sure.
Yes, I think that she will pull through, but she might be more injured than Peg was. And I think it's going to set Jarvis on a different path. I don't think Jarvis would be the person that we've heard Howard and, well, now we've seen him, but, like, that Tony would have known if Anna dies. Like, I feel like something would have changed this character so dramatically that I don't think it would have been.
He wouldn't have been as.
Yeah, I feel like I'm, like, colored. Hair. I'm colored by the MCU at this point.
Yeah.
To be like, I don't think that Jarvis is going to undergo such a huge character change, which I think that her death would definitely set off.
Well, and just, like, the thought, we didn't even touch on this, but, like, the thought of Anna being in trouble when Jarvis is driving back to the house, like, he is very different.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's a very, like, I like knowing that that is in him and that care and that, like, you know, just
that fire.
Dedication and love that he has for her is just so ingrained in his being that it takes even a thought of her being in trouble to, like, set him off. Like, when he picks up the gun and he's like, we're moving now, like, that, he doesn't even have time to blink and he shifts gears. So I think definitely if something were to happen to her, we wouldn't have had any of the wonderful Jarvis stories and stuff that we had in the MCU. But I do think that something is going to change in him regardless because of the fact that she was in danger.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know if her death would do anything for the story just in terms of this show, like beyond the greater MCU. And I think it would kind of ruin Jarvis, who is, like, just the most delightful character on the show. I don't think he could continue being that. And I agree with Brittany, but I do think it's going to just light a larger fire under him to get some sort of vengeance for that even happening to her, for her just getting shot.
Yeah. And this makes me think of something else too. And, like, backtracking a little bit to me actually shooting someone. We've seen her, like, be powerful and be ruthless, but it's with a power that is inherently in her.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something, like, physically outside of her that she's using as a weapon, which I thought was different and not, you know, like, because watching when we were talking about, like, Jarvis picking up the gun, like, that felt very foreign. And he's, like, clearly been uncomfortable with, like, you know, just using, like, even when he's flying, like, it's these, like, outside things that cause harm that are, like, kind of not great for him. But watching the same sort of story play out with Whitney here, like, using a physical weapon that's not something that's, like, inherently in her, like, with the Zero Matter, was just also kind of added on to, like, the shock value of, oh, she is willing to take this action.
Karen, as a super fan, was this something that you remembered happening, or did this come as a surprise to you as well?
Anna getting shot?
Yes, sorry.
I It took me, so at the beginning of the episode, I didn't remember that this is the episode that happened. I did forget about it. And then as we realize Whitney's going to the thing or to like go to Wilkes, I'm like, oh crap, that's right. And then I kind of like tuned in more seriously watching this because I remember like this being heart-wrenching the first time around. And it really is because, like I said before, Anna is more of a civilian than any of the other ones. And she's the one in the crossfire now. And it's just devastating because she was so afraid for Jarvis, and Jarvis, you know, on their way back being terrified for her and basically his worst nightmare coming true. And you can just feel the love between these two characters. And so it's heartbreaking because you love Anna, and it's heartbreaking because you love Jarvis and you love their marriage and everything. And it's just a lot to handle. But I will say that the one highlight of this entire thing that I would not have known the first time that I watched this was Tom Choi, aka Mr. Yukimura from Teen Wolf, is the doctor who takes care of Anna in the hospital. And I saw his face and heard his voice, and I was like, wait, I know who that person is. And it made me so excited in the middle of all of this devastation.
I don't even remember there being a doctor.
Really?
I'm very happy for you and your excitement in Anna's moment of like grave peril.
Life or death situation. But hey, anyone who's watched Teen Wolf knows that Mr. Yukimura is the purest of pure souls. And it was just really great to see him for like the 2 seconds, literally, that he's in. I think he has like one quick line and you see a flash of him and then he's gone.
Oh boy. So then I want to talk about the final shot of the episode, but were you able to switch gears back into this second quiet moment between
being devastated? Yes. Yes. It was quite easy to be reminded how sad the end of this episode is.
How sad and not excited you should be.
Yes.
It's just the moment of Peggy and Jarvis not really saying anything and holding hands and just being there in a moment of quiet. I think this is one of those shots that I remember most when I think about Agent Carter. It's not one where a ton of stuff is happening, but it's one that very much is emblematic to me of like her relationship with Jarvis and just how I feel about the show.
Yeah, and she just got like some news that she clearly is thinking like, I need to jump in and handle this, but then she sees Jarvis alone and scared, and she's also scared, and I think it's just like a grounding reminder of like, no, like Daniel can take care of himself in this for maybe a second. Like, this is where I need to be. It's not running off to deal with the problems at the SSR. It's right here.
And or the fact that she made another terrible decision and allowed Dottie to get away.
Right.
Honestly, that doesn't bother me, which is weird, but I feel like Peggy is also beside herself right now.
Oh, of course.
She hasn't known Anna for very long, but Anna has been nothing but lovely to her the entire time, and their connection was like immediate and very trusting. And I feel like it's not difficult with somebody like Anna, who's just like, this is who I am, and I love everybody, and, you know, she likes taking care of people. And Peggy sees somebody that she can obviously trust, and her decision to leave a random cop watching over Dottie was probably the stupidest thing that Peggy has ever done. But I don't blame her.
Don't look in the trunk. Just whatever you do, don't look in the trunk.
Don't listen to whoever is in there. Yeah, it was so dumb. But, like, I don't blame her because she thinks Anna is dying. And he's like, this is more important than anything else. And, of course, she's going to go be with Jarvis and go, you know, wait until she figures out if Anna's going to live or die.
I also thought that cop was a plant, like, because he was just so, like,
yeah,
emotionless. And I was like, oh, he's clearly working for someone who's going to, like, but then he got shot. And I was like, ah, poor guy.
No, I had the same reaction. He seemed very shifty.
Yeah, hella shady.
Like, I don't know why he was playing it that way. Like, if the guy just went rogue and he's like, this is going to be my character, and just played it that way. But yeah, he was, it didn't help that the lighting in that scene seemed very slightly ominous. Not in the, is Anna going to live or die, but just in the, like, who else is going to get hurt or be betrayed or something. It was odd. So I did pick up on that as well. All right. Were there any other thoughts or scenes in this episode of Agent Carter that we didn't discuss that we wanted to, or that anybody wanted to bring up?
I think we kind of learned a little more about why Whitney has gone full evil in this episode. She kind of had that little spiel to Wilkes about how, like, they were both marginalized and she's going to make it so that they're not anymore, which we kind of didn't know before why she was so bent on world domination. So I thought that was interesting that she kind of found a kindred spirit in him in a way and tried to bring him in on that regard before she just took him.
And he was like, lady, you are crazy.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because I had a thought during that scene. I thought it was interesting, but also kind of weird that Dottie was the character to point out to Wilkes the reason why Wilkes was hired at Roxxon. Like, the fact that, like, they needed a token woman, or, like, a token African-American to be working there. I thought that it was weird that Whitney had to point that out.
Yeah.
That, like, that was a surprise to Wilkes. That's Did true. That strike anyone else?
Yeah, especially because in the first episode of the season, I think, or maybe the second, it, like, Wilkes was obviously very aware of his place in the world. So for him not to pick up on that, but maybe he just wasn't as bitter about it.
Which, again, like, we discussed this several episodes ago, how for a show all about feminism and how a lot of women go through the things that Peggy goes through, which is, like, being underappreciated and not, you know, overlooked and all this other things, which many people of color also feel, they really drop the ball so many times with Wilkes' story. And here in this episode, like, they literally point out how their two stories are so similar, and yet they've handled Whitney's arc so much better than they've handled Wilkes's. And it's very, very frustrating, because, again, I think his character could have been great and so interesting and a really new dynamic to the show, and they just keep lagging further and further behind, and it is very frustrating.
Yeah, I agree. I was actually thinking before I watched this episode that they hadn't brought up anything to do with race in so long, and it did seem like that was the direction they were going with this season with Wilkes's character, and then they just didn't. They just kind of ignored it. So then for it to come back in that little way in this episode, I was like, oh, but maybe not enough to make it impactful at all.
And, like, it might have even done the opposite, like them pointing out the fact that he was sort of like a token person at Roxxon kind of reveals the fact, or, like, makes us think, at least me, makes me think more of the fact that, like, he's like a token character on this show.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in trying to give these characters, like, a similar motivation or draw them together, they kind of expose, the show itself kind of exposed its own shortcoming with this character that they're trying to build up. So, yeah, thank you for bringing that up, Kendra. I completely forgot I wanted to talk about that. Anything else? Any other thoughts on this episode? I feel like it's one of those episodes where stuff happens, but, like, not a ton of stuff happens, if that makes sense.
We feel very much on the precipice of, like, what's coming next.
Sure. like a transition episode almost.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, then let's get into our favorite scenes and favorite lines. I know that we've covered quite a few of these favorite scenes in our discussion, but I would still like to highlight them again. So my favorite scene was the moment with Jarvis and Peg in his car on the way to rescue Dottie and just the discussion that happens there. Like I said before, I love that quiet moment. And I just love scenes of Peggy and Jarvis, no matter how they're interacting with each other. They're always my favorite. Karen, your favorite scene, please.
Yeah, again, we have already talked about this, but it's the way that Anna supports Jarvis, but still worries about him, because I love that she's not like holding him back, but she's also like, look, I'm terrified. And he kind of comforts her. And then on the flip side of that, just how he goes beast when he realizes that she's in danger, because we do not see Jarvis like that ever, except when it comes to Anna. He doesn't even get that way with Peggy, and he cares about Peggy so much and is always worried about her. So I love their dynamic so, so much.
Great choices. Brittany, your favorite scene?
We talked about it way, way, way at the top of the episode, but just Whitney and Dottie during their like interrogation with each other, just because of, you know, coming into that scene, not knowing where it would go. And it was just great. Great to see them interact, and something that was kind of unexpected.
And I was happy to hear it kept you on the edge of your seat the whole time. Mm-hmm. Kendra, your favorite scene, please.
I really liked Sousa's interactions with Masters kind of the whole episode, but especially in the first scene where Masters showed up to his office and tried to push him around, and Sousa was just like, no, because we don't get to see him. We don't get to see like what he can do in terms of leadership a lot. And I think that really did a lot to show like how strong and like just inherently good his character actually is, when we've seen, unfortunately, Jack Thompson kind of crumble under the same power. He like really stood up against it.
That's a really good point, by the way. I hadn't really thought about that, but he does follow Peggy's lead a lot, which I love. I love how supportive he is of her versus, you know, Jack, who tends to be the blocker a lot of the times. But yeah, in this moment, you really do get to see him kind of stand up, and like, he is chief and he is allowed to say these things.
Mm-hmm. And we see the reason why he's chief.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Favorite lines. So mine, I guess, is much longer than everyone else's, but mine is a relatively short exchange between Peggy and Jarvis. After Jarvis fixes the transmitter device, Peg says, "Your hidden talents know no bounds, Mr. Jarvis," to which he replies, "Oh, one doesn't spend years in the company of Howard Stark without picking up a thing or two about electrical engineering." And then Peggy quips, "Luckily you didn't pick up the clap," which I snickered at, mostly because it doesn't seem like a show where they would talk about the clap, but I guess with Howard Jarvis, with Howard Stark around, anything is possible.
Yeah.
Even if he's not physically around. Oh boy. Karen, your favorite line, please.
Much like Brittany, I also loved Whitney and Dottie's interrogation. Especially when Dottie is like pretending to be terrified, and she's like, "Oh my God, we're definitely in the same boat. Let me just confess everything to you." And Whitney just goes, she's like, "We're not in the same boat. We're not even in the same ocean." And in that moment, like, I was so terrified. Like, she just, her confidence, her quiet confidence, and the power that she has, knowing that she's just better than everybody else. Like, you see that in men so often, you know what I mean? And to see it in Whitney was just like, yeah, Dottie, you need to be careful with this one.
Yeah, very careful, for sure. Brittany, your favorite line from this episode?
It's just when Peggy slams on the brakes and Jarvis like just turns to her and goes, "Unsafe." I'm so glad like I had to pause it, because I was laughing and like clearly there was going to be a conversation coming, and it was just so funny where he's just like, the look on his face, and then he's just like, "Unsafe, like, what are you doing?"
Oh man, your enjoyment of Jarvis. I know I say this like all the time, but your enjoyment of Jarvis makes me so happy.
Oh well, I'm glad.
And Kendra, your favorite line from this episode, please.
Mine's from the same conversation when Peggy says, "It was an exciting moment. He kissed me. I indulged him." So even though I don't really care that much about Peggy and Wilkes, it's just cute to hear her like admit that it was exciting and to talk about that.
She's so like dead serious about it too. Yeah. Like she just like runs through that sentence at a million miles a minute. It's so funny.
She just doesn't know how to deal with it.
No.
It's very entertaining. All right. Well, those were our favorite scenes, our favorite lines, and our thoughts about this episode. And we want to hear what you have to say. So please get in contact with us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. You can come find us on Tumblr. We're at rewatchable.podcast.tumblr.com. You can come join our Facebook group, Rewatchables Rewinders, and come talk to us about the episodes in there. Or if you would like to talk about some line that happened in Atla that I have no idea what it means. You can do that there too. Just I will not be interacting with that post, but I'll interact with everything else. And as always, we would love it if you would left us a review on iTunes. Reviews on iTunes go a long way. They help other people find our podcast, and we can just kind of grow as a community, which would be really great. And so if you rate us 5 stars on iTunes, your incentive for the week is that Karen will hold your hand.
Aw, I would do that. I like holding people's hands.
Yeah, you're a good hand holder. I think this is a great incentive. So you get a hand holding all for the low, low price of 5 stars on iTunes. Let's make it happen.
There's not a better deal out there.
I don't think so. No. It's a steal. All right, let's get in some listener feedback because we do have people who like to talk to us and we love that very, very much. Brittany, I know you put in a note here. Brittany runs our Twitter in case you haven't noticed. And she put a note in here about one Twitter user, one listener who's making her very happy.
Yes. So Pirate Angel.
Only like them because of their name.
Well, all right, rude, but yes. wow. Okay. Did not make that connection until right now.
Really?
Come on, Thor super fan.
Listen, it's a heavy mantle to live up to if I need to carry this by myself, okay? Adana Girl is, she's going to great lengths recently to bring about a lot of content, very episode specific and non-spoilery from when the show was airing. And
thank you for filming. That, by the way.
Yeah, tons of behind the scenes videos and just like dub smash compilation videos that are non-spoilery because, you know, as a newbie running the Twitter, sometimes it can get a little iffy, but just great content all around. So I'm going to be retweeting them and just sharing them with you all. But there was one in particular that is from 2016 that was brought back to our attention, mm-hmm. Of like a behind the scenes look at what it actually looks like when Haley and Enver are filming the Dub Smash videos. And
yes,
it's very, very good. So
I watched it in the middle of this podcast and I blacked out for 2 minutes. I have no idea what we were talking about because I was watching him dancing and like that is all my brain could process.
Yeah, it's glorious and it's a thread. There's quite a few videos there that I think you should all go and watch. So thank you, Pirate Angel, for being a true hero and friend of the podcast.
Yes.
Yes, thank you very much. The dub smash stuff, that summer was the best summer of my life.
And it's a gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, like I remember it happening as like a non-Agent Carter or even really like MCU huge fan at the time.
Sure.
But I watched all of it.
Yeah.
Like, I loved it because of like Clark Gregg, like just swinging to like on a wrecking ball. Like that was, I think, one of the first ones I saw and I'm like, I'm invested.
Yeah.
So like I went through and just like kept track of it all. I think there's a post on Hypeable maybe recounting all of it, but yeah.
I think so.
it's a good time to be alive.
Yeah. And like the ones they were doing while filming season two that weren't part of the competition. I think that was one of the ones that we saw, the behind the scenes one that Pirate Angel shared. They just chose the most ridiculous things and just had so much fun. There was a Backstreet Boys one at some point. I don't know if you saw that one. That one always makes me giggle. Ugh, I haven't. So good.
Well, I probably have many years ago, but I think I'm going to go and look for them.
It was Backstreet Boys. Yeah. So yes, thank you very, very much, Pirate Angel. And if you pick up anything else, please, please do pass it along. Kendra, would you get the second tweet for us, please?
Sure. This is from Amy W. at Rockin' Librarian on Twitter, replying to the "we like our men best when they look like they've been run over by a train" tweet. Knowing this was coming, I just rewatched this episode 2 by 6, so that's last week's episode, this morning, and then all the rest, because how can you stop? And seriously, that man looks good when he looks terrible. This was always one of my favorite episodes because Spy Jarvis is the best, but every Jarvis is best.
Every Jarvis is best.
Which I know,
best.
At least Brittany.
Yeah. Amy's 100. Just right all around.
Yes.
He does look best when he looks terrible. Yes, thank you. And I'm also glad, I think there was someone else who replied to us on Twitter that was just like, I haven't listened to the episode yet, but I immediately know who you're talking about when you're talking about them looking like they've been over by a train.
Yes, yes. I think that might have been Nurse Brack.
Oh, so great. So great. All right. Well, before we wrap up, I do want to get into some predictions as to what's going to happen next week. So it is now time for Brittany's brainstorms and Kendra's creeping suspicions for Agent Carter Season 2, Episode 8, The Edge of Mystery.
Well, I feel like we're on the edge of the season because what do we have? 3 episodes left?
We are. Oh, man.
I know.
Don't remind me.
Sorry. I got to start planning stuff for the next round.
Yeah, I have a lot to get ready for.
I mean, we can just keep going with Agent Carter discussions for quite a few weeks to give you more time if you would like.
I mean, honestly, we probably could at this point, given everything, but...
Yeah, we still have this. We got some Endgame stuff. We got plenty of time. Plenty of time. But... in terms of where we're at, I think the mystery in question is going to be WTF is going on with Wilkes, because that's the biggest question mark right now, besides where is Dottie. I think it's going to probably be a little more science-y focused and figuring out, you know, what exactly is happening. What is the zero matter doing to these people? And can it be contained? Can it be extracted? What happened to all the people that she absorbed? Are they all just like living in an alternate universe with Ant-Man? Who knows?
Oh God, let's not go there.
Why? I would love to be transported to an alternate universe and hang out with Paul Rudd, but you know, that's not my life.
I mean, yes. If that was the only thing, if that was the only moment, yes, let's do that.
Kendra, what do you think is going to happen?
I think now that Mastros has kind of taken over, I think he's going to very quickly get in over his head and Whitney's going to take him over and he's going to have to turn to Peg and everybody. Maybe not turn to them for help, but he's going to need their help.
Oh, that's going to suck for him.
All right. Then I guess we will just have to wait and see and watch next week's episode to find out. But until then, I'm Danielle.
I'm Karen.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Kendra.
And we'll catch you later. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Because now, normally, I just use the Hypable account. Mm-hmm. Karen beat me to it by literally 30 seconds because I logged in and I went to start the meeting and it was like, somebody else is already starting it. And I'm like, well, it's not posted in the Facebook, so that's a lie. And then my Facebook was like, ding. And I'm like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking, okay, it's 5 minutes beforehand. I need to do this before somebody else does this.
I was wondering who was going to be the one who was going to do it.
Yeah, well, I was setting up the show notes and pulling listener feedback.
So you were doing 10 jobs while I was doing one.
I was like, oh no, I'm dropping a job. How am I juggling?
You need to leave. Yep, we can't have that.
All right. Bye.
Brittany's not doing enough, clearly.
Clearly not.
I don't know how to function if I'm not doing all of it.